All right, welcome to another episode of The Gray Matter, where we come together to discuss more than just the hot topics and headlines of the day from a black man's perspective. We appreciate that we are not a monolith, and every subject deserves to be explored with nuance, giving a view from all sides of the culture. So we're here, hopefully, to bring that to you every week with a little bit of class, some fun. Our panel consists of three guys that are nothing alike. And you'll soon come to find out just how much we love each other in spite of our sometimes very big differences. Mm-hmm. I'm Billy Craig. As always, I'm joining you from the first state in the Union, Delaware. Mm. Today, I'm joined by my boys, Bubba Bexley in Nashville, Tennessee. And we have Grady Wilson joining us from Portland. Go ahead and get it out your system, Bubba. Tell him.
Get it.
I want my daddy's records.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm on my daddy's records. Yes. All right. I knew it wouldn't take you no time at all to get down.
No.
That's it, man. And so today, we have a special guest that's going to be joining us.
Yes.
Our newfound friend and buddy. Go ahead and bring him in here. LaRon. LaRon is joining us. He's also actually in Portland. But
right now.
Yeah, man.
Right now.
He said
at the moment.
LaRon Barton, everybody.
It's wild out here.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? How y'all doing?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot, man. We're doing pretty good. So we are definitely grateful for your presence and being able to join us today. And so, Andre, why don't you go ahead and tell us not only what we're going to discuss today, but why LaRon is here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we like I said, you know, with the mental health conversation and the where is God conversation, we kind of take pride in covering topics that other people may be afraid to cover. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of the foundation of our show. So one of the things that we wanted to kind of dive into, obviously, as Billy said in the intro, if you haven't watched us on YouTube or anything like that, we're African-American males, so we give you black male perspectives. And so all kind of different ones. So that's kind of what we are diving into today, is being black and navigating white spaces, black spaces, all the spaces in between. And we are definitely fortunate to have an author, mm-hmm. An advocate. Like you got so many things before your bio, man. I can't get into them all, but
my uncles and aunts would call you a heavy brother.
That's love right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's a heavy brother right there.
Yeah. Published in the Harvard Journal and TEDx's and all, man, Essence, all these things. So
be like you when I grow up.
Man, when I grow up, I don't want to be a Toys R Us kid anymore. But no, we wanted to invite LaRon on to kind of share his experiences. Brothers from Kansas City. And moved out west, and he's had some world traveling experiences just the same as all of us have. So we have plenty of experience in this forum. So we just want to kick it off and have a dope conversation about it. So as customary, we always start with the guests first. So I'll just start off with a question and we'll just start the conversation from there. So LaRon, if you don't mind, I'm going to just throw you a lob question. Here we go. We're going to kick it off. So as you alluded to us before in pre-production, that you're from Kansas City and moved out west, but the environment that you grew up in may have been a little bit different, or well, I guess typical but different from what we are now as adults. So how do you think that has shaped the perspectives on how you've been able to move through, you know, moving to LA and all those other places?
Sure. It's a really good question. First off, I want to say thank you for allowing me to come. I really appreciate it. I'm always down to talk with the folks, you know, especially some black men. We don't have these kind of conversations very, very often, unfortunately. So I want to say thank you to that. You know, being from Kansas City, man, it's one of those things where, you know, you grow up in a city that is, you know, predominantly white. Not only that, but just is, you know, it's Midwest and it's Southern. So, you know, it's a very segregated city. And so you know that you are Black, because, you know, they let you know under no uncertain terms. You know, this isn't like a liberal city, like, say, Portland, like San Francisco, where, like, they're kind of like fake nice, you know, where they're like, we love Obama. You know what I mean? We want to go to Roscoe's, too. No, like, you know, they like the racial lines are drawn pretty deep.
Bold face.
It's like magic marker, right? And so, you know, it shaped me to know, you know, who I am. You know, growing up, we were taught, you know, being Black is beautiful. I mean, you know, my mother, you know, she would often say, I wish I was darker, because, you know, I'm a dark cat, right? So, you know, that was instilled in me. It was instilled that, you know, being Black is beautiful and it's the shit, excuse the language. And so, you know, growing up, you would definitely see like the haves and have nots. I mean, you know, you would see, you know, the white side of town, they would get the new stores. They would get like the little nice little restaurants, you know what I'm saying? And while us, we had liquor stores and food deserts. So it was, you know, like the school differential was so large and, you know, anytime, you know, we wanted to do something nice, you know, we had
a public school cat or you a private school cat?
Public school, 100%, man. Like, we didn't have the money to do private school. So, yeah.
We didn't either. We all went, right, though.
That's, well, Andre did, but
hey, Andre had the money. We all went to private school, but none of us had the money to get there.
Right. How'd you guys get in?
We can run.
We can run, jump, and play and take tests, bro.
That's all it was.
Yeah. Good on y'all, though, man, for real.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I mean, you know, just you know, Kansas City made me want to explore and made me want to see more, because I knew, you know, and, you know, I have a pride of, you know, where I'm from. Like, you know, I'm from Southside, you know, I'm from Southside, Kansas City, 63rd Street. So being from where I'm from made me want to explore more. And so I just had this insatiable, you know, desire to travel and to see more. But, like, you know, as I've gotten older, gentlemen, like, I've gotten to fall in love again with my city, because when you grow up and when you're poor and when you grow up in a city like Kansas City, where it's like, you just don't have anything. And when you go over to the other side of town and you're getting frowns and, you know, people don't want you over there. It's clear they don't want you over there. It breeds a sort of a distaste. But now that the city's kind of on an upswing and just, you know, being older, man, and just really appreciating the lessons that I learned from being from Kansas City, it's really made me truly love where I'm from.
Let me follow up on something real quick.
I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. I'm gonna let you talk, Bill.
Yeah, I just had a quick question, because I don't know that you're familiar with this, but we have, at least on a couple of occasions on this platform, talked about how, now we're all from Cincinnati.
Yes, sir.
We all same grew up there, and yeah, same
man, like, hold on, like, I know, y'all getting tired of us like smacking y'all around, huh?
You know what?
Cheeks and bangles, huh?
You know what? See, I was getting ready to be nice, but now see what you made me do.
Hey, you bare knuckle now, bro. I can't even help you.
That's day one.
Called arrowhead, a bowhead. And I was like,
you know what? Yeah, no, you know what? That was. That's another conversation.
Yeah.
Check back with us on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm gonna say check back on Wednesday.
This is for health.
Right. Yeah, you done got all up in my mental. What I was gonna ask you is this: we've talked about this previously, being that we all grew up in the same neighborhood in Cincinnati, and what I was gonna ask you, because like you like us, you have traveled and lived a lot of different places.
Right. Yes, sir.
And as you were talking about what almost sounded like there's an affinity. Now, I love Cincinnati. I love my home. But I have no desire to go back there And
can't
some
do
of
more
it,
than 72 hours.
Right. I literally, after about 3 days, right. it gets itchy. It gets really uncomfortable.
I feel you.
Even though I have matured and grown, I don't feel like the culture or the environment in this city has grown with me, even though I've gotten, I mean, I'm older. I haven't been there really for any length of time since I've been a kid, like a young
man.
The
90s.
Yeah. And so my question for you is, what type of relationship do you have, not just with the city or your old neighborhood, but like with the culture? Because Kansas question. City has changed.
Yeah.
But has it changed with you?
It's Kansas City, Missouri, right?
Yes, sir. Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, I ain't talking about
I'm just saying we have some people that
like the real Kansas City.
The real Kansas City. No.
Thank you. What is wrong with you?
Right.
I just like to clarify.
It has, man. I think that you know, as I've grown, you know, I've been able to see different things, meet different people, just experience, just grow. I feel like that the city has grown as well, man. I feel like that there's more opportunity for us. You know, I feel like that there's, I mean, unfortunately, you know, well, I mean, as far as like the different type of businesses that are coming down, just like there's.
I'm curious because I have people who have lived in Kansas City and have left, and I'm curious. And again, we're all Midwest. Right. We're all Midwest born and bred. So I'm curious.
I think that so first off, like with just America being just so expensive, right? I feel that it's not necessarily like a boom town, but I just feel like that there are young folks that are coming in there and they're sort of revitalizing neighborhoods, right? You know, they're, you know, they're bringing different opportunities that may have not, like, dude, like I seen a boba shop in Kansas City. I was like, word? I mean, like, to me, like, that's kind of symbolic of the changes. I mean, dude, like there's a Canes there. There's these different type of chains, and yes, you know, there is gentrification. I think that's kind of unstoppable, but I feel like that there's a sense of hope. Now that could also, you know, be due to the Chiefs, you know, like, you know, dominating. It could also be sorry man, like, you know, dude, like you guys mayor called Arrowhead.
We're jocks. We're not going to get upset by you talking about the Chiefs dominating. We're not going to get upset.
It's not
going to
happen.
Yeah. But all right.
But it brings money in. So I definitely understand. Successful teams bring money to the area. So
No. Do like, you know, successful teams do bring money. I think like many cities, like I'm pretty sure, you know, like, you know, I've never been to Atlanta, but I'm pretty sure like there are parts in Chicago. Nah, man, like, you know what, man, and it's a story behind it. I'm not big on humidity. Like the first time that I've been to the South,
that cancels you out immediately.
That was one of the reasons why I left Kansas.
You can't go south of the Appalachians.
I was gonna say there's there's a third of the country you can't.
Right? It's a wrap.
Stop at the airport.
The first time that I went to the South was back in 2018 when I did my first TEDx, and I went to Florence, Alabama. Ooh, and you know, it was starting to cool off, but I was like,
where Florence, Alabama is, but I've been to Birmingham in Tuscaloosa because my oldest son was decent at football, and I don't ever want to go back to the state of Alabama. I don't even know what the heck you talking about. What's Florence?
Florence, Alabama is actually not too far from Tuscaloosa. It's actually in an area called the Muscle Shoals, which is sort of like a group of cities together. I mean, it's
right.
You know, Florence is incredible. It's North Alabama. That's where that is. But you know, being able to see the city from a different lens, like, you know, like when you grow up, you know, you're like, you know, I want this. How come I can't do this? How come I don't have access to this? How come, you know, people in California live this way? You know, why does New York seem like this? Why does Chicago seem like that? And so, to be honest with you, you know, as I've, you know, seen and been to a lot of these places, I've sort of, when I would come back to Kansas City, I kind of loved it for what it was, man. Like, you know what I mean? And as well as like for what it is, like it's not Chicago. It's not Kansas City. It's never going to be, you know, Los Angeles, but you know, it's really charming. It's really family oriented. You know, I don't think that I'll ever live there, but you know, it's where a lot of my origin story starts, man. And, you know, and again, just like the lessons and the wins and the failures that I've experienced, many of them come from Kansas City. So
what high school did you go to? Yeah. What high school did you go to?
I first started out at East High, which was an agricultural high school. I was a future farmer. Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah. I know. Like I was a future farmer of America. So.
Nice.
He was a 4F guy, yeah. Huh?
Yeah. Yes, nice. Sir. You know, got a chance to go to Des Moines, Iowa. Went to a farming like a convention really young. Went to Adventure World, then. But you know, I've always
shout out to Guillermo doing well out in Des Moines.
Yeah, that's true, my boy. Guillermo. Yeah, our boy.
Yeah, our boy.
But you know, East just wasn't my jazz, man. Like, you know, it was kind of a violent school, you know, and I just I'm a writer, I'm a creative, and so I auditioned for this school in Kansas City called Paseo Academy of Fine Arts. The writing people, they liked my samples, and so I was able to get in, and so, you know, that's where I finished my 11th and 12th grade years. So
okay, yeah. All right, so other than writing, farmers. You have a like is writing your thing, or are you multifaceted? Yeah. Like you know, Trey, for instance, sings, dance, rap in all one show. You understand what I'm saying?
That is just not a good comparison, my
you
bro.
Know he don't dance.
Like, yo, I
stay at 10 at 2 now.
That is bad hip hop, man. I would say for me, everything starts from the writing. Like, you know, it's my favorite thing to do. It's the easiest thing that I know to do. Like, it's probably the only thing that I know to do that's very effortlessly, you know what I'm saying? Okay. It just comes natural. And so it was just something that I just always love to do, man. You know, I'm writing it.
Do you like poetry? Do you like, you know, writing stories, like scripts? Like what's your bag? Like when you get in your bag, what do you do?
So I started out writing stories. I would write short stories when I was younger. Then I would create my own comic books. Then from I started writing poetry, and I got really good at that. And I wrote a play. And as I got older, I began to write essays. And so I think that my strongest medium there are between essays, poems, and now speeches. Because I mean, it's just, you know, I mean just being able to like sort of bring out emotion, tell a story, I mean they all sort of like go together. And but yeah, man, like I'm a
really good writers poet. If you don't know, like Dre's a writer, Rev's a reverend, so he has to write like literally every Sunday, right? Like he got it. His pen game is serious, right? Like we all got pen game. That's why I'm asking. I'm just trying to figure out. I'm just trying to pull a little bit up out of you, bro.
Even between like the two books, man. Like, you know, I think at my basic level, I'm a storyteller, and so you know, not only do I love to tell stories, but I also equally love to listen to stories. And so, you know, it's always been, you know, it's always been revolved around like telling a story. So yeah.
So, since we are on the writing kick, this is a perfect segue. So you wrote a book called Straight Dope: A 360 Look into American Drug Culture.
Yes, sir.
So we have the. Well, let me ask first. How old are you? Not to get.
I'm 45.
Oh, okay. So we all in the same.
We all the same. Yeah.
Okay, so we all crack baby. Crack baby generation. All right, sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So what kind of in the realms of that book and your upbringing, like, was your upbringing the catalyst for that book, or was this something that the book was just completely separate from that? It just happened to coincide.
Very good question. So growing up in, you know, Southside, like, you know, you've seen drugs. Like, I mean, like, you know, I'm not gonna front and say like that I grew up around, like, you know, New Jack City, but I mean, you know, the talk of drugs and seeing drugs and having family members on drugs was a regularity. And mm-hmm. you know, I've always wanted to know, you know, like, why is America so inundated with drugs? And so, you know, one of my favorite writers of all time is a guy by the name of Studs Terkel. Rest in peace, Studs. He, if you've not heard of him, he was a Chicago-based writer, and he would, what Studs would do is that he would pick a topic, and he would just interview people. And you know, it mm-hmm. for me, like, I'm a very inquisitive person, and I just like listening to people. And so mm-hmm. I just wanted to just talk to people who, you know, people who were addicted, people who sold, people who use, people who've been impacted by, you know, drugs taking their close ones' lives, parents, teachers, drug counselors, just, you know, I wanted to get like a full sort of look into it. That's where the 360 degree comes from. And yeah, you know, I got some really good answers, man. I mean, you know, writing your first book, I mean, like that'll always be my baby. I mean, that's when I sort of stepped out to become a professional writer. It's actually 10 years old. And, mm-hmm. you know, being able to create this project and to just sort of see it through. And, you know, the fact that writing a book is a lot of work. I mean, I learned a lot. You know, one of the greatest things I learned is that you can never be your own editor because,
right.
You know, you're just not going to look at it objectively. But yeah, you know, I really liked the project, and I think that it turned out okay. You know, I think that, you know, it should have turned out better, but I mean, still, you know, it's a great achievement. So
let me ask you a question real quick.
Yes,
because
sir.
I kind of want to, this is one of the things that I wanted to, and it's kind of a two-part question, so bear with me. Mm-hmm. One is, even in just reading some of the stuff that you've read, kind of just wanting to get a little more familiar with you, I noticed that there's a lot of stuff that you talk about that we kind of call like being in different spaces, not just like right. the fact that we live in different cities than where we grew up. But one of the things that a lot of people, when they talk to me, what they do is they eventually find out, not only do I live in a different place than where I grew up that was familiar, but I actually exist in spaces that sure. a lot of Black people kind of feel like they're not comfortable in, right. whether that's in academia, yeah, that was, whether that's in a certain neighborhood,
right.
they're not comfortable there. And I, one of my, you know, my experience is that at a very young age, I'm talking second grade, I got bussed off into schools that were all white. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of one of those fight or flight. Yeah, we all did. And so there was kind of a fight or flight thing where it's like, there was no flight involved. It was either fight right. or just cower back.
Billy right. chose so, fight. There was supposed to be a flight. Billy
yeah,
chose
there fight. Was supposed to be a plan, and it wasn't. But the point is,
it wasn't no choice.
I got comfortable with the idea that I'm going to have to be able to exist in spaces that were not intended for me. I was, Paul says this all the time, where it's like, I got in the huddle that I wasn't supposed to be there. It was not planned for me to be there. That's how I got most of the right. things that I have in life, was being able to adapt quickly. And so my question for you is, because even in like the TED, the space where you're talking about doing TED Talks, there's not a lot of Black men
mm-hmm. right.
who have done TED Talks. And it's not because we can't. It's just there are spaces that were intended for certain audiences, certain people, to actually project in that way. And you have, like us in many ways, invaded those spaces. So the first
right.
part of
I like
question
that. Literally
is,
invaded.
Literally invaded.
You weren't invited.
Spaces. Yeah.
No,
there was no invitation. Yeah. You just were there. So my first part of my question is, and I'll save the second part for after you're done, but the first part of my question is related to how you, what was your journey in invading those spaces? Because you've got a lot of spaces on your resume.
So again, like, you know, it's a very good question. You know, I first, you know, credit it to God, but definitely I also credit it to my family and to, you know, living in Kansas City. You know, my mother, she always encouraged me to talk. You know, I have a stutter, right? So, you know, if anyone's listened to me at an extended period of time, you can tell that I have a stutter. So she would not let me not talk, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, she would not let me feel sorry for myself. And so growing up in my household, you know, we were always taught that we're just as good as them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and I think that it's really important for young Black kids, especially young Black boys, to know that, you know, you're not a thug, you're not a troublemaker, you're not second class, but, you know, you're just as good as them. And so, you know, there are times that I've faced imposter syndrome. You dig? I mean, like, dude, like I just defeated it this year. I'm gonna keep it all the way live with you.
I'm gonna keep it all the way live with you. I fight it to this day.
Yeah.
To this very day, I
it's
fight
crazy,
imposter
right?
syndrome.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Every day.
And it's like, you know, I say that I would fight it because, you know, when you're the only one, right? Mm-hmm. In those spaces, not only you being the only one, but where you coming from. Like, you know, we were poor. So there'd be times where, and I'll never forget this this day in particular. I was in San Diego. I went to the W Hotel, went to their rooftop. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I just looked around, y'all, and I was like, damn, man, I feel country as hell. Like, because I mean, you know, I never seen nothing like that, right? Like, you know, it right. was just like, you know, at the time, it was the nicest hotel I've ever seen. And I'm like, yo, like, right. I'm just not letting niggas in here, excuse the language, but it's like, so I mean, you know, being there, like, I just realized, you know,
I gotta stop something. I know you from Kansas. I know where you from.
Right.
If I say cuz, is that bothering you?
Not at all. Not
okay.
Not at all.
That's all I wanted to know. Then like, we can go ahead.
Get to go, man.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess just, you know, like, you know, my mother always told me that if you don't believe in yourself, why should anyone else, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, right. it's very scary to sort of put yourself out there, right? But for me, man, like, you know, I've been laughed at. I mean, look. You know, having a stutter family, I was teased. You know, kids used to make fun of like me being dark. My first play that I wrote in high school, it was so bad that the actors laughed at the dialogue. You know what I mean? So it's like
rap song was terrible.
Really? Bro, I got booed off stage my first time performing. So
yeah, see? Yeah, we all been there.
So, I mean, so you know, you're constantly like developing like that thick skin, but just I knew that, but to go back to answer your question, man, I knew the places that I wanted to go. I knew that unfortunately I was gonna be one of the only. You dig? So it's like I had to like mentally prepare myself, like, all right, so you know, I'm going to go to say, I mean, just think, all right, so I'm gonna go to say Venice. I'm gonna be one of the only. I'm gonna do my first TEDx. It's not a lot of Black men doing TEDx's. You know what I'm saying? There's not a lot of Black men coming from where I'm coming from. Like, I always say, listen, yo, like, you know, I'm not supposed to be here, man. Because it's like, when you come from like poverty to be able to reach that, you know, that means, you know, you've been grinding your whole life, man. And
right.
I mean, to make it, you know, it's not a self-congratulatory thing, but it's just sort of acknowledging that the road to get to where I am and have been has been a different as well as very challenging one. And, you know, when I work in tech companies, I'm gonna be one of the few. You know, when I go to these conferences and when I speak in front of these folks, I'm probably gonna be one of the few Black folks that they've ever, you know, heard talk. And just the way that I talk, right? Because, you know, I don't code switch, I don't do none of that anymore. I'm just real. I'm just official tissue. You know what I mean? You see what you see, and I'm not going to like hide what I am.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So one of the things that I was thinking about when you were talking, because as Paul mentioned earlier, all of us went to Catholic high schools, right. So private institutions, and we knew from the jump that we didn't belong in those spaces.
And they didn't want us there.
But the thing was, I didn't care because I knew I had something to offer. Absolutely. I know you, I knew you needed me because I ran a 4.3 and a 40. I knew that you needed me because
my man fast.
Yeah, I could do some things. Whereas, so I brought a value to the school. So it was a different swagger that I had going into that space. But for you, and I just thought about this because you're a writer and still navigating those spaces where you may not, from a tangible, like going in, they don't see the value in a writer coming to join that space. Whereas they see, you know, 6'2", 180 pound corner coming into that space. They're like, oh, we can do something with that. So when you're navigating that space, and I think the appropriate word, and I'm actually falling in love with that, is invaded that space, with the preconceived notion of all I got is a pen and a pad. And I'm going to give you something different that may not be tangible or may not put points up on the scoreboard. Like it's just thoughts. Like how did you kind of fight the urge to flee in that moment? Like where it's just like, yo, this is
we all wanted to leave. We 100%. All wanted to leave.
You know, I mean, I don't know, y'all. Like, you know, I just wanted to just see more, man. I mean, like, and I know there's a saying in business like that I've heard, right? It's like the higher you go, the wider it gets, right? I mean, you know, that's just real. It's like the more successful you get, the less of us. And I knew that like the things that I wanted to achieve, like racism, white supremacy, anti-Blackness is going to be there regardless, right? And you know, exactly, man. I mean, like, you know, I think that when people try to say, oh, you know, I made it despite, I'm like, look, man, that's some bull job, man. I mean, but that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day.
I could give you a Salt Lake City conversation, man, about this whole situation, about Blackness, whiteness, and everything in between. Like, that's a whole episode right there, bro.
You know, bro, it's funny because like when I first talked to y'all, man, and you tell me about being Black and Salt, like I was like, damn, like that is something like I mean, like that's something that I would love to learn.
Dude. So it was really, really hard. So my kid was also famous. Sure.
Right.
That's what made it worse.
I mean, the white folks was probably just,
if we were like
on one.
Not until it was actually pretty chill till Trump got elected. Yep.
Right.
It was actually really chill.
Funny how that happened.
Who I had problems with in Salt Lake were other brown people. I didn't have no problem with white folk. The white folk actually ain't that bad. It's the brown folk that you gotta worry about in Salt Lake.
You know, man, like Salt Lake, like when I went up there this year, man, I thought it felt very foreign. Like it felt very interesting. Like, you know, it didn't feel like Portland. It didn't feel like Seattle. No. It didn't feel like San Francisco.
No, it is foreign. Like that feeling was, that feeling was genuine.
Your feelings was right, my man.
I'll say this, man. Like the air was real clean. You know what I mean? Like, no, you know, it was no. No,
Salt Lake got the worst air quality in America outside of LA.
Oh yeah. I'll be like, where's the LA?
Yeah, especially in the winter because of the inversion.
With them orange skies.
So the sunsets are so beautiful.
Oh yeah, it's like the sunsets
are so beautiful in Utah.
I'll say this, man. Utah is gorgeous, bro. I still want to make it to the Moab, man. That's something. Have you ever been?
I've been through. I haven't spent a bunch of time, but Moab is dope. I believe St. George is actually the prettiest part.
Really?
Of Utah. Yeah, St. George
is
so beautiful. Yes, St. George. That's where all the Red Rock is.
Okay, I did not know.
Down in the south. Like, and that's about maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours from Vegas.
Damn, okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like when I was driving through Utah, I had to go to Salt Lake. Then I believe I had to go to like Vernal and Price. Ooh, do you know where those cities are?
Vernal?
Yeah.
Wow. For what? Ain't nothing there.
Business, man. Like,
that literally, there's nothing there.
He know people, man. Leave that man alone.
Vernal is like going to Vernal is like somebody saying you had to go to Trotwood.
Okay, he had a purpose. Stop putting like, his business out bro. There.
Vernal different. Go ahead. Vernal's my bad.
Putting him out here on blast.
Vernal's definitely somewhere that I did not know existed. But right. You know, I
that's exactly what I'm saying.
But you know what, man? Like, it's you know, like I don't blame Black folks who want to flee those spaces, man. Mm. Because you know, one thing that I don't do, man, it is like I don't blame. Look, you know, we're all victims of racism, white supremacy, mm-hmm. right? So it's like I don't blame.
Black people too.
You think so?
Yeah. We're all victims of it.
See, man, I think they're doing okay.
Colonized. No, I'm not saying that they're suffering. I'm saying we're all victims of racism.
I like that.
Nobody gets out alive. Like there is definitely contamination, and you will feel the effects, but they are not suffering as a result. It is not commiserate. Like,
man, they definitely are affected.
I love that.
See the world, how their entitlement, whatever you may.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
How about your fear and just fear of, you know, your fragility is the direct result of it too. But let me follow up on something else real quick though, because you touched on it for a second. I kind of want to go back here because a part of invading spaces, quick story. When I transferred schools in second grade, I was in the art program and I had a teacher who I am certain has long since passed by now. She was old when I was in second grade. So we're talking 40 years ago.
She's watching right now.
Man, look, shout out to Miss Bennett. You know, because she listen. But what happened was, I actually had a really significant stutter that Miss Bennett, my teacher in second grade, recognized. And later on, when I went back to visit her, she would go on to tell me that she recognized it, and that's why she made me read aloud. She made me speak up in class because I was the only Black kid in my class. And she understood that mine, even though we didn't call it like imposter syndrome, she understood that mine was coming from anxiety related to
Absolutely.
It. And me you too. Wrote a really hard piece, like a really very introspective piece, talking about how you basically one day was just like, man, F it. I'm not about to sit here and live the rest of my life worried about stuttering or I can't get my words out and how other people are going to receive me. What I was going to ask you was, how did that affect you when it comes to invading these spaces? Like, I was thinking when we have you back, this is the space this is the Space Invaders forum, right?
We're going in.
Right. And the question is, see, like when I had my issues, it was similar, but it sounds like it was quite different. My question is, how did you invading those space, how did you having the speech problem with the stutter, how did that affect how you invaded these spaces? And the follow up to that is, Is that the reason why you lean so hard into writing? Because writing is something that did not require you to actually have to use your words.
That's a dope ass question. I'm gonna sit back.
Super dope question. You know, having a stutter, and so I always like to look at it as like pre and post TEDx, right? So before the TEDx, you know, when I you know, having a stutter, I would there's a way folks can sort of like talk around certain words. Like, you know, there were times when I would have a problem pronouncing my name Laron, so I would just say Ron. There's these things they're sort of masking words.
They call them strategies, by the way. My wife is she's one of the best speech language pathologists.
Yeah, his wife is actually a speech pathologist. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm actually, I wanted you to speak to this because in the Black community, it is something that oftentimes children don't get the resource. Their parents do not force the school to give them the resources to be able to deal with it. So that's why I'm particularly impressed with your story. That's why I want you to talk about it.
And we also have a homeboy who's a football coach in Cincinnati Public School who stutters. Like one of my dog, like I played with him in college. I was the X, he was the Z. Like that's you understand what I'm saying? If you understand football, you know what I mean.
I feel you. Again, trying to just sort of just like step around these words, trying to say things so fast so you don't trip up, and just honestly, man, sometimes even being quiet, you know, there were times that because I was so afraid to stutter, I would not speak up. You know, there would be opportunities that would just pass me by because, you know, I wouldn't speak up. And regarding the writing correlating with the stuttering, I don't, not directly or not explicitly, but when you're on like the dating apps, right? Like, you know, you can type, you know what I mean? You have to be vocal. Or I swear to God, like, you know, I never forget this. Like there were times where I would do good on the phone, do a phone interview for a job. And I think like, yo, I nailed it. Then I'd be like, hey, you know, we want you to come in for a face to face. And I'm like, shit, like, you know, I've got to actually talk in front of people. So
I got to look at you while I'm doing it.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it was the anxiety, man. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where we often view things worse than what they really are. Right. So I never forget, like, I was in a fashion show and, you know, I had to show some skin. And so I'm just worried about this. And so one day I woke
Billy's,
up.
That's a Billy's alley.
Hey, dude, listen,
a bodybuilder.
I woke up, I had a panic.
I used to do runway modeling. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm dead ass. Yeah, so like, I'm not, that's not a joke. That's like, that's a fact.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you got to, so you know that you have to look a certain way, right? And so I woke up with a panic attack. And so I called one of my friends. I was like, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I fear. And she's like, Laron, look, ain't nobody gonna be looking at you for more than 15 seconds. As you walk on and off, ain't nobody gonna be worried about you. Why are you?
And as a male model, you're kind of just a prop anyway.
Exactly, man. I mean, so you know, I just kind of looked at it like, look, people are not paying so much attention to my stutter more than I am. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm putting too much on it, basically. So I just decided, like, after I did the TEDx, and I just really started to, instead of, you know, prior to that, gentleman, like, I would never talk about it, right? Like, you know, it would just be something that I would not even mention, I would not even gloss over. Now I own it, and that's because I was able to do something that I've always wanted to do. And to give a talk about stuttering, someone that stutters, I mean, it's kind of crazy, but, you know, one of like my disability that I have, I'm giving a talk about it. I'm doing this podcast. I mean, when I started doing podcasts, I would hate listening back, man, because I'd be like, I'd probably sound terrible. Now I'm like, yo,
imagine being a rapper with that problem.
Yeah, man.
Man.
You know, like one of the greatest rappers, I believe, of all time is a guy by the name of Jay Electronica, and he has a stutter, and he's dumb nights. Aight. Like,
yeah.
Now,
he's not better. He's not
one rhyme every 5 years.
But I mean, but dude, like quality over quantity, man. I mean, like, you know, you could be Drake.
Drake can't be the Bardo, dog. Come on, man.
Oh, true. You're in the wrong room bringing up Drake.
No, don't do this.
Nah, don't do that.
I'm just not a fan, man.
But I feel what I'm messing with you. And it's interesting because even as you're talking about that, one of the things is not only because, and mine was relatively, not that you compare them, my issue was minor partly because I got the help that I needed young. Mm-hmm. And even as I was reading, as you were talking about your situation, how it took, like, it really was something that it's been kind of with you. Absolutely. So I guess the TED talk was almost like I conquered the mountain, like I've overcome. Man. And now it's like you kind of can't tell me nothing no more. Like I
got a basic ass question. Did you fight a lot as a kid?
Not really. I wasn't afraid because I mean,
I didn't say you were a punk. I said, did you fight a lot?
when I was a kid, like Anna, like this is the real talk hour. So
from the Midwest, you know what I mean.
Right. So I think the last fight that I had, I was in the ninth grade, right? And I'm like, and this girl, she's kind of a big, kind of big girl. And you know, we started fighting and I'm putting her in a headlock and I'm all like, yo, chill. And it's like, you know, she gets out and, you know, she gives me like a nice two piece. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Like easy.
Rasputin should bust your ass, huh?
Man. Right. It was
out here fighting Della Reese.
She has some hands though. For real. She was like, chill, relax.
That's why Eddie had to shoot her in the toe.
Exactly. Well, you know, man. You like, you know,
yeah, the great, but I mean, Eddie, yeah, like quick, what? Quick ain't want no smoke.
Man, you like, you know, he definitely defused that situation. But no, I mean, like, you know, that was the last fight, but. You know, going back to the question, just, you know, after I did the TEDx, man, I just was like, yo, like, you know, I'm not ashamed of this no more because, you know, this is, I mean, like, it's a part of me. It's not who I am. And when you have something like that, that is socially unacceptable, right? People make fun of it. I mean, like, gosh, I mean, we've seen movies, you know, dudes making fun of like the Dunna man, you know what I mean?
I asked that question because growing up, my daddy was dead when I was two, and I was mad all the goddamn time. All right, I didn't say that for sympathy, but I'm telling you, I was a super angry child, so I fought all the time. And I could only imagine if I was also getting picked on.
Yeah, I was about to say, when did it expire?
When did you grow up? you wasn't talking about it.
That's why I asked the question. Did you fight a lot as a kid? Because hated on his shirt is actually the most angry person on this podcast.
Do tell.
And he got Jesus. He worked for Jesus. So.
Like Paul got a ramp up period. I'm pretty chill. Billy goes 0 to 60.
Yeah. Dre is always the he is always the sobering.
If Dre is wanting to fight, sobering, it's too late.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, somebody done really picked the wrong one, babe.
No,
you don't want him.
If he upset, it's a problem. It's a whole problem if he upset because he don't get mad at nothing.
I'm the unicorn rainbows guy.
But I mean, like, kids tease me when I was younger. So it's funny. It's like, you know, my stutter would come and go, right? You know, like, you know, it would be here for 6 months, then it would leave, then it would come back. And I mean, and And if we're just being honest, like, it really started to get profound as I got older and as I, you know, began to drink alcohol. And it was like, okay, you know, we're staying. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, man.
Has your anxiety gotten better or worse as you've gotten older? Because I know my own is getting worse as I age. I don't know about the rest of y'all.
That's a good question. I think my anxiety can be situational. I know it revs up, or it used to rev up when I would have to introduce myself. You know, like when we're all kind of going around the room, and you're like two, and it's like two people away from me, it would kind of rise up. But you know, now, man, I mean,
I feel that. I feel that because I'm my wife's husband. I don't know if y'all know what that feels like, but I am my wife's husband. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? She's not my wife.
Right.
Yeah. So when I have to go do events, my anxiety is horrible.
Why is that though? Why do you think?
Because I'm my wife's husband.
He's stepping Graham.
Yeah, his wife is important,
bro. Yeah, she's super important.
She's important, and he's just he's the plus one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have to be interesting and all these extra things whenever I go to these events, and she's the star of the room. So my anxiety goes crazy around these events.
You know, it's crazy, believe it or not, LeBron, people who, members of my congregation or people who listen to me regularly, it's not a big church, but I preach every Sunday.
Yes, sir.
And then I have, like, you know, we have our Wednesday nights, whatever. People, for years, I would tell people about it. The only time my stammer is noticeable is if I'm extremely tired. If I haven't gotten enough rest, I don't care how prepared I am. I don't have any anxiety about it. But when I have not gotten proper rest, or if I'm like dehydrated, really tired, fatigued, body beat up, man, you talking about butchering a sermon. Like, it gets to where every point, every third, fourth sentence. And so it
you already
kind of
got that soothing ass voice, mugs,
yeah, but it presents,
ready to go to sleep. God,
but to your point,
bro,
it presents, and that's why I like how you use the word situationally.
You know exactly what
situationally. Right. That's my situation. If I'm tired and I didn't have enough rest, it'd be like really bad. Right, so yeah, I can understand what you're saying.
But since you are age, I know we talk about nowadays kids are, you know, soft and like things, it's society has changed and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, but we grew up in a time where there wasn't really much policing or bullying or like with bullying by fighting. Like that was
pretty much. Yeah, you better be able to run.
Yeah. Right. There wasn't no telling the teacher.
Take it.
Yeah. It wasn't no telling the teacher. And we have guidance counselors and there's a meeting with the principals and all the parents sit down.
Craig will step in and save you.
But one of the things I do think has been an improvement in society is related to dealing with people with disabilities. Just because we've become better trained in that. So like, I'll never forget, like when me and Paul were after our pre-interview, when we finished talking to you, I had mentioned to Paul that you had, on your website, you talk about you had a stutter and stuff like that. Paul was like, man, I ain't even noticed. But like, I think growing up, we would have definitely picked on it. I think now as time has gone on, we've all matured and society has matured around disabilities and things like that. We're a lot more nice about, you know, people being different. And so in that space of people being different and moving and all of us moving to different places, like I'm in Nashville, Paul is in Portland, Billy's in Delaware, and all these spaces are still for the most part white spaces, but they have different levels of tolerance within those spaces. Like people always ask me about Nashville and what's it like for racial.
I love Nashville, man.
Yeah, the racial component.
Nash Vegas, as my little cousin call it.
Man.
they
no better partying, man. No better partying.
There, but we see a lot more interracial couples here than we do in anywhere else in the state of Tennessee. It's widely more accepted. Like, I mean, to the point where
you want
to
know,
like,
the capital? Go to Omaha.
Mm. Surprisingly,
Omaha,
yes.
Nebraska.
Yes.
Go to Omaha, Nebraska. There's more interracial couples there than there are homogenous couples.
Yep.
Wow. That's crazy.
But with Nashville, like, it's also more like it's more tolerated. Like, it literally is more tolerated here than like it would be in Knoxville or Chattanooga or some other places.
Memphis even, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, definitely in Memphis. So I was just wondering, like, from your experience, from like, but it was eye opening for me just because, again, I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, but raised in Cincinnati, just like, you know, these other two. And so there was always a stigma that came with the interracial component, at least what I found in Cincinnati, where it was like a culture shock when I moved here. And it was just like, oh, yeah, I don't Nobody really cared. Care. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Right. All right, cool. Like, I never cared, but I'm also, again, as they stated, I'm normally the level one. Have you,
did what, you Trey? What's real up? Talk? I felt when I lived in the South, I figured out that it was way more tolerated in the South than where we were.
It was in Cincinnati.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
Like, because I lived in Miami for 10 years.
So,
you know. Everybody getting with everybody down there, right?
Right. Everybody pretty down there. Yeah. Well, there's some beautiful people down there, boy.
It's just, you only get judged if you're not with a pretty person. That's it. Everything else is
right.
But when you've moved and navigated, and I think all of us, you know, I've given my answer, but like when you've moved and navigated different spaces, are there different cultural things that you found that were more shocking once you left your original? You know, or left your original place is kind of my question.
Yeah, I mean, so for example, like, you know, when I went to San Diego, I mean, I never seen just, for one, I never seen Filipino folks. You know what I mean? I never was exposed to
as well.
Gorgeous. Yes. I mean, you know, I've never been exposed to just like heavily Latino neighborhoods. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you know, Kansas City, we got the West Side where we have a small Mexican population, but just in San Diego, it's a very heavily Latino city because we're right next to the border. And plus, it's California. How people thought about, LGBTQ folks. That was my first time ever seeing like a lesbian bar. A bar dedicated to lesbians. Wow. Like, you know, I would see men holding hands and kissing, and, you know, back in Kansas City, I never saw that. Everybody was just so much more just relaxed. They were just, you know, cannabis, you know, everywhere.
You learn to mind your business when you move to a big town.
Yeah, man. And it's like, you know, cities like that, you know, people go there to find something or to leave something that they're coming from. And I just found that, you know, there were so many different types of people, whereas like Kansas City is just primarily white and black. There, you know, I saw so many different types of Asian people, and not only that, but just different languages being spoken. I mean, Spanish being like a dominant language. I mean, that was, I mean, it was amazing, like, for me to see
How
that.
How were you so, when you got there?
When I first got there, I believe I was 19, maybe 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you got turned out the same way I got turned out when I moved to Miami. I was 24 when I moved to Miami.
Ooh, man, yeah. Young boy, huh?
So, yeah, I was a young boy, and I was turned out. Like, I saw people selling stuffed animals on the side of the highway, and I was like, this is the place.
They had that caravan that you always wanted that you didn't get as a kid.
Like, okay, so it's money down here. Like, you could just stand on the side of the highway and make some money. This is it.
That was Atlanta.
I'm never going home.
Because I spent about 9 years in Atlanta, and it was the same experience, where it was like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I always say, like, people who live in California, like, they're, they just I mean, like places like California, Chicago, New Florida. York, they just don't know because it's like, you know, like you are just so afar, you are so far ahead of the culture of the culture wave versus like being in Kansas City and, you know, you're having to catch up and it's just, you're just like, wow, like, you know, I didn't even know people could live like this. And then, you know, traveling outside of the States and just seeing how people live, but man, like there, I mean, and then taking a bigger leap and then moving to San Francisco, man. And that was a humongous culture shock because I thought I was liberal. And then I went to San Francisco. I was like, damn, I ain't.
So you don't lock your car no more?
Man, listen, you know, San Francisco,
what's the point, right?
San Francisco and Oakland,
they're gonna get in that mug. Exactly. Don't put nothing in it. Just keep it open. Just keep it unlocked, bro. They get in that thing.
Funny, man, is like, you guys ever watched The Wire?
Yeah.
All right. So you remember episode 3? I'm sorry, season three.
I'm out. I checked out midway through season two.
Yeah, I was about to say right around there. I still follow the reference. Yeah.
But I mean, so
I got Lucy pictures with Snoop though.
Oh, like Baltimore Snoop.
Yeah.
I met her at Alicia Peterson.
I met her at a Mayweather fight. My wife and I went to see a Mayweather fight in Vegas, and she was at the casino, and I had to get a picture. Yeah.
Was she cool as hell.
Okay, super cool. Sure. Her and the big tall dude.
Man, let him make his reference to The Wire, man.
But all right. So season 3, Lieutenant Bunny Colvin's like, we're going to create like this drug zone, right? And he was like, it's gonna be like Amsterdam, but the locals start calling it Hamsterdam. Well, when I went down to San Francisco, and there's a part of San Francisco, and so this is not a this is not me bash San Francisco. San Francisco is amazing. It's a beautiful city. I love it. You know, it took me leaving and then coming back to be like, yo, like I love it. But like any city, San Francisco has its problems. There's a part of San Francisco, it's called the Tenderloin. Now,
I know exactly what you're about to go. I know exactly where you're going. Go ahead.
The Tenderloin, like, so again, you know, I grew up in the hood. We would see like the little like local crackhead, you know what I mean? He or she kind of like, you know, doing his thing. They, you know, trifling, whatever, right? When you go to the Tenderloin, I wasn't prepared for that. Like I've never seen an open air drug market.
That's real though. Yeah, bro.
Are you in Portland?
Well, so you know, Portland's got.
You do understand we was handing out crack pipes. The state.
What y'all handing out? Crack pipes?
Crack pipes and syringes.
Somebody was that liberal. Portland's that liberal.
You can listen. You can justify the needles. I understand that, but the crack pipes. I'm just like, no, dude, stop. But
I'm wild out this piece, boy.
I mean, but yeah, like I, you know, being down in the TL, man, I was like, wow. Man. I mean, like just seeing people sitting on the sidewalk, you know, shooting up. You know what I mean? I had never seen that before.
Smoking meth just outside.
Said, just, like, you know ready. What I mean? Out. Just
like all willy nilly. Like
just like basing out. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was real, man. So, but you know, but just like but I mean, like that's but like that was like one of the few negatives. But I mean, just like being in like what I call a tier one city. You know, like Miami, Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco, Boston, those other cities. It's a really, you know, like Chicago. It's a truly like world class city. And so I think that I needed to go from Kansas City to San Diego to sort of prepare me to go to San Francisco. And, you know, it was a really great sort of progression, if you will.
And what you're speaking to, LeRon, real quick, just before we wrap, population size does not dictate the variety or the diversity. Because a lot of times people, so for example, if you look at the population size of, say, Boston, and you were to compare it to Atlanta, Phoenix, people just assume, oh, well, you know, it's going to be. Atlanta is not nearly the melting pot. Now, it's granted, it's diverse, but it's not nearly the same as what you would see if you
it's
go
not
to
an
Boston.
International city.
It's right. No, right. Atlanta's right. International. It's just not like it ain't the center. No, man. I mean, it's the biggest.
Atlanta is not an international city.
I lived there for almost 9 years. Trust me, it's very international. It's I'm only saying city. That. It's not the same.
It's Wakanda. Right.
International. Here, it's international. All of that. No, here's the thing. And see, this is part of the bias. We'll get into.
It's not a DC, right?
Well, here's what I was getting. Well, okay.
Say. Let me back
up. A lot DC of times when people city, when people right? say
that's the original chocolate city.
This is Atlanta. And we can pick is up Wakanda. On this later. No, Atlanta. People consider diversity, and they automatically assume people who come in from Europe or people who come from China or people who come from those places, mm-hmm. they don't understand. Atlanta is not just black people. You have tons of Haitians. You have tons of people from the Caribbean. You have tons of people from South America. And those are the parts that don't get spoken about because people just figure it's all black people. But well, just because we got the same shade.
They speak about it in the bottle in Dade County. They talk about all those groups of people that you just mentioned.
Of course they do. But my point is, like, Atlanta is, other than Miami, it is literally, without question, the most diverse city in the southeastern United States. And it's, and I don't just mean it by comparison.
Do you think that it's more diverse than, say, somewhere like Houston?
That I was just about to
say. I was
going to
say, Houston and Atlanta, actually, Houston and Atlanta are about the same. I would consider Houston more.
Houston is a bigger city than but Atlanta. Houston,
that's what I was getting ready to say. It's bigger, but I'm saying they're kind of committed like that. I will put them on the same level. I wouldn't put them on the same level as New York or San Francisco.
No.
Yeah. Or DC, you know, DC like Chicago, or something like that. Chicago, right.
Or
yeah.
San Fran. Yeah. Or Seattle. Right. Yeah.
No, like, but you know, I think that, whenever you know, and again, man, like, you know, we come from the Midwest. So, you know, you went to Miami when you were younger, you know, you probably saw some stuff initially that was just mm-hmm. like, oh, my God, what is really going on? You know, I mean, like, and it's funny. It's home. Like, yeah, I mean, or like when I first went to, you know, like when I first visited New York and I was just like, mm-hmm. wow, you know, like this is. It's like there's certain things like nothing will prepare you for it. And so you mm-hmm. just have to just sort of, you know, when I went to London before I went to New York, and those are two totally different. I mean, they're similar, but they're different cities. But it's just like when you go to a city like that and you're just like, damn, like it kind of makes you realize from me, gentlemen, like that what like where you come from and just. What this city is about and just what your city's like, you like, you know, and when I was younger, like I used to, you know, crap on Kansas City, you know, I used to be like, oh, you know, Kansas City ain't it, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you know, now that I'm older, you know, now that I've traveled, now that I've settled down, now that I've really realized, all right, so, you know, every city's different. Every city can't be what New York is. It's just like, you know, I mean, every city cannot be Chicago. It cannot be San Francisco. That's why these cities are so unique. And so instead of comparing, you know, the cities, you just have to just accept it for what it is. And
appreciate
once you,
it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly, man. And it's like, yeah. once you really accept what it is, you're able to appreciate things that it has. And yeah, yeah, you know, so, you know, that's where I'm at with it, man.
All right. For those of you who are not watching us and you're just listening to us on one of our platforms, one of our streams, we want to say, first of all, thank you for subscribing. Thank you for taking the time to listen.
Absolutely.
Secondly, though, that sound you just heard means it is time for the APB. Who are we looking for this week? And I think it's only fitting, based on the conversation, the whole Space Invaders thing, that we... I want to take a little bit of a twist to this and offer this up. Who I'm looking for is I'm looking for people to actually put their money where their mouth is and be willing to donate, be willing to actually give support, be able to give financial support. And a couple of organizations that I'm going to shout out are the American Speech and Language Association and also the Stuttering Foundation. One of the things that was interesting, we were talking about this, and again, because my wife is an amazing speech language pathologist, one of the things that happens, especially in the Black community, is that the school system is how resources get to children who have problems with speech, problems with hearing, problems with any other type of delays. And so what will happen is you may have heard the term IEP, right? Mm-hmm. This is what they get. This is in, what is it? Instructional, educational, something, whatever the acronym is for. But the idea is that if you have something that holds you back in your learning, the resources are provided for you through the educational system, through the actual public schools.
And you have to fight and advocate for your children.
You have to advocate Absolutely. For your children. You have to actually be. And so I say this because the first line of defense for most of us, the first time that they notice it can be even with some random kid who actually maybe gets good grades. The first way that they would know that this child actually has a need for an IEP or they have something that is holding them back in their learning comes through speech. It's the first sign because that's when you can notice it. When a person's writing, when a kid is writing, you don't know when they're stopping and starting and how they're overcoming or what challenges they're facing, or even for that matter, what strategies they have. So what I'm looking for is people, especially in the Black community, to not only invest and be able to give to these nonprofits, but also make it a point that with your children, or even if it's another child in your family or somebody that you're close to, really encourage their parents to advocate for them so that they can get the services there. It is not something that is extra for the public schools. It is not like it's going to cost them more. It's not like you got to beg them for something that, or you got to fight to because you don't deserve it. No, it's there. It's just a lot of times our community doesn't know that it's available to us. And so our kids end up not getting those services, especially when we're talking about speech and language. So I want to just encourage people. I'm looking for people to both donate, give money, actually support those foundations and other ones like it, both the public ones and even the private ones that are in your community, but also really advocate and encourage your friends and loved ones and family members, people at your church, people in your lodge, whatever it is, to advocate for children to get the things that they need. I mean, let's face it, people like me, people like LaRon, it could have gone a whole totally different way in our situation. And yet there's a lot of kids out there who are getting left behind because they're not getting services to help them be able to overcome. So that's my APB. I'm looking for people who are actually going to support and really work with these kids so that they can get in a position where they can get resources to overcome some of these struggles that they have in learning. All right. Well, that is yet another episode of The Gray Matters. We want to thank you for stopping by, taking the time to listen to us. We want to encourage you once again to offer us up ideas, questions, advice. I'm sure some of us might take it. But if you have any input, anything, Probably please leave not. Us comments and suggestions. We want to make sure that we're giving you everything that you are looking for on this platform. We want to say thank you again for subscribing to us. Continue to do that. Encourage other people to come listen. We want to once again thank our very special guest, LaRon Barton, for taking the time to join us today. We Absolutely. Hope to have you back thank again you, in the very near future so Absolutely. We can discuss many things that about being the Space Invaders. I like that. So I want to encourage you all to join us again next week as we take on another topic. And again, thank you for being a part of our community that we are forming here. See you next time. Be blessed.
And check out LaRon's website, laronbarton.com. He got some dope material on there.
Absolutely. Got some books and everything. Like, cuz is a heavy brother.
Everything. Right. That you would want to know about LaRon.
So a preacher, a stay-at-home dad, and a rapper walk into a bar.
I am my ancestors back from the grave. No longer a slave, beat to the gods, meal, pray, survive in my day. A threat to society, cause Malcolm showed me the way. I'm young, black, intelligent.
Oh, now they afraid.
It's too late, I am the king, I am the spark to the brain. I am the light that fought the dark and now you see in the rain. I am the thing they spent their whole life killing. To find out, I am the rose that grew from under their building. This ain't for life, this is a fight so you can open your mind. Peel the scab back, reveal the blood and see what we'll find.
Promise.
Like LeBron, I am just one of a kind. No longer will I accept the blind, leading the blind. Keep it a buck, say what I want, not giving a screaming after World I Park until the day my heart stops. And when I do, remember when I take my last breath. Just remind the tape and witness all the knowledge I left the grave. So I said, a preacher, a stay-at-home dad, and a rapper walk into a bar. The Gray Matters.